Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you proudly every single week by King's Comics in Sydney, 310 Pitt Street. If you ever want to come and pay Kings a visit, you can find any of the books that we talk about on the show there, or you could also find them online at kingscomics.com. My name is Levins.
My name is Siobhan.
And we are recording this one. We're not in the same room for once. First time ever. We both had doctor visits today.
Yep.
We're both fine, but also, one of us may have been sedated and was told that he can't drive for at least 24 hours.
How good is sedation, though?
We're doing it. Oh, man. It's so good when they tell you to just start breathing in and then okay, now count down from 10.
Yeah.
I don't think I got to 9.
No, yeah. That's the best. They're like, this will be a glass of champagne. And you're like, well, I wish champagne was actually like that and didn't just make me throw up.
What, you wish champagne made you fall asleep?
Yes.
Within one sip?
Yes. Okay, right. That's exactly what I want.
Every week we review all of last week's comics, and this week's episode is brought to you by two of our patrons. These two lovely gentlemen signed up as Patreon supporters of Serious Issues. Their names are Matthew Burner.
Thanks, Matthew.
And Kevin Eddy.
And thanks,
Kevin.
Thanks,
Matthew. Thanks, Kevin, for making this episode possible. If you would like to be a very cool patron, you can head to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast, and sign up there for as little as $2 a month. We'll thank you personally on the show. You get access to a bunch of bonus episodes, our newsletter, and some more cool perks coming your way later in the year. Very fun stuff.
It's a good call. Do it.
So we kick off every episode of Serious Issues by reviewing all of the number ones that came out last week. And I've got a little pile of them here in front of me. Siobhan, what one should we start with first?
Let's start with one that I thought was heaps of fun from Boombox, Hi-Fi Fight Club.
Yeah, this is great. Hi-Fi Fight Club, a new one from Boombox, which is an excellent all-ages kind of very often just very good at showing a wide range of people in their comics for young people and old people alike.
Mm-hmm.
This is written and created by Carly Ustin with pencils by Nina Vakueva.
Nailed it.
Vakueva? I don't know. Fuck that. Sorry, sorry, Nina. Inks by Irene Flores and colors by Rebecca Nolte. Actually, with great lettering by Jim Campbell as well. This was a what's the five? A quintuple threat of creators.
Absolutely.
Hi-Fi Fight Club is the combination of the movies Empire Records and Fight Club.
But with teen girls. So
with
pretty much
girls.
Everything that you've ever wanted.
So, yeah, if Empire Records was only Reese Witherspoon. Was it Reese Witherspoon? No, Renee Zellweger.
I've never seen that
Renee Zellweger. It's I'm sure it hasn't aged very well at all. but basically is about focuses on a young girl, Chris, who works at a record shop. She's only been working there for a month. This is set in the 90s in 1998, which is a great era to set a music-based comic, in my opinion.
I agree.
And she's in love with another girl that works at the record store who's way cooler than she is. In fact, everyone at the record store is cooler than she is. Mm-hmm. But they're all pretty cool to her. She still feels really inadequate compared to the rest of them. But most of this episode is her kind of like, you know, dealing with her insecurities and wanting to be the best record store clerk she could possibly be, and also have the girl that loves her, that she loves, love her back. And then there's an amazing twist at the end that I did not see coming.
Not at all.
At all. Siobhan, you love revealing twists. What's the twist?
It's a fight club, guys. They have an underground fight club underneath the record store. That's a pretty good twist.
So all of these cool girls... When a fight is it a fight or like a riot that a riot run starts happening in the store because a band can't show up or some nonsense. But they run a teen girl fight club, a secret teen girl vigilante fight club that now Chris has to join.
It is super cool, and I feel like, you know, as someone who was a teen girl once many many moons ago, that sort of sense of like looking for identity in something external is very relatable. As someone who started working in a comic book store at 17, this is like, this is incredibly familiar.
Does King's Comics have an underground fight club, Siobhan?
Okay. There have been genuine like bouts, because if there's one thing nerds love more than comics, it is various forms of martial arts. And once, two former staff members, Costa, who was a champion wrestler, and Matt, who was a beginner at jujitsu, had a bout after a convention. And Matt whooped Costa's ass, and it was just the best. It was so fun for everyone.
I think Costa listens to this, and Matt doesn't. Rewrite history for Costa's sake?
Yeah. Costa smashed Matt. Fuck Matt.
Fight Club, a really, really fun one. Mm-hmm. Boombox always putting out series that are worth a look if you are interested in something different. I love that they built all the characters and the world of this story while only focusing on the record store and the relationships until the very last page, and then they revealed that there's a fight club.
And it's one of those...
I mean, I guess you knew there was a fight club on the cover, on the title as well, but...
Really, we should have seen that twist coming. And it's one of those books where, like, the characters could feel really one-dimensional, but they don't. I think they did a good job.
Yeah, definitely. That was a really, really fun number one, and another Boombox series that I'll be adding to my pull list every week, every month. Definitely worth checking out. Okay. Let's move over to DC right now for a new mini-series they've started. Siobhan, if I told you that one of DC's beloved superheroes turned bad and got rid of all the other superheroes, would you say, hey, I've already read Injustice?
I would say no, because I haven't read Injustice.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Nightwing, The New Order is a new miniseries written by Kyle Higgins with art by...
Trevor McCarthy.
Oh, God damn it. Trevor McCarthy, thank you so much. And this one is set 20-ish years in the future. I think it's like 2028 or something like that.
2040.
Oh, wow, fuck. Very, very far into the future. Oh, no, that's literally like 23 years into the future. That's still... I was close to it. Yeah, right.
It's okay.
Life comes at you fast. but Nightwing, The New Order is basically about... We see at the start of this book that 12 years ago, which is an amount of years from now that is less than 20. but at some point in our future, but in this book's past, Nightwing basically did something that took away the superpowers from all of the DC superheroes.
Or he got rid of all of the superheroes and found some kind of technology to dampen people's superpowers.
That's right. He now has a son, and he is also like kind of like the leader of a special police force that makes sure that basically these power dampeners and basically anyone with superpowers is unable to have access to their superpowers.
I really loved this.
Yeah, me too.
This is quite similar to what's going on in the Batwoman comic at the moment.
Right.
Except that the sort of totalitarian leader is Tim Drake. So it's interesting that these two are coming out at the same time. But I love, like, potential future stuff that's definitely not going to come to anything. That's always really good fun. And I like, you know, this setting up so many fun mysteries. Like, who's the mother of Nightwing's son? Where's Batman? What actually happened to make Nightwing go this nuts? I love it.
I think a lot of people in our group, which you can join and have your opinions in at facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast, have been saying that this does feel very similar to Injustice. But I think the future setting, I think, is makes it a big difference, that this is like, you know, all the superheroes are already gone. It's not like this is going to be him going up against other different versions of the superheroes like other books have done. So I think the real point of difference is going to come in finding out what drove Dick to make this decision, and also the consequences coming back to bite him in the butt, so many years afterwards.
Yeah. Yep. Good fun. I like this a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Carl Higgins is a great writer, mm-hmm. and I'm sure a great runner, too. Do you reckon he's a good runner?
I think definitely.
That's another one that I'm sticking on board with.
Agreed.
DC also put out another number one from their Kirby 100 celebrating stories. Mm-hmm. We got the Manhunter Oversized Special, written by Keith Giffen, Dan DiDio. Sam Humphries. We got one, some art by... Mark Buckingham, and the first of two books featuring art by Steve Rude this week. Did you read all of this?
I did. The first story, like, props to them trying to do their very best Kirby, and it was pretty good fun.
Yeah,
like, it was pretty silly, but it wasn't anything amazing.
Yeah, agreed. I don't have any connection to the character of Manhunter, though, so maybe that may have, you know, made me enjoy it a bit more.
Mm.
But I do love the character of Etrigan the Demon, and we got a great story written by Sam Humphries with just incredible art by Steve Rude.
But
as the backup,
Etrigan didn't speak in rhyme. It's the best/most annoying part of the character, and I frankly will not stand for this non-rhyming Etrigan.
As a writer, what do you think is more annoying? Having to write Etrigan's speech in rhyme or having to write Bizarro's?
Oh, Bizarro dialogue? For sure. Bizarro would do my head in.
Did you like the story aside from the rhyming?
I did like that a lot. That was good fun. I enjoyed that a lot. But easily the best part of this issue is the, like, totally nuts backup story, which is sort of like really early Jack Kirby from kind of his romance comics era.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Like, this was so weird.
We got a very strange story called The Face Behind the Mask, which I really enjoyed too, but I thought it was so funny that they put this random story, because the other ones have kind of included, like, you know, the Legion of Newsboys or whatever it is, and the whatever it was. There've been stories that relate to the other stories in the one-shots we've been getting, but this just had nothing to do with Manhunter or the Demon.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Just a very funny. And we got a cool robot story as well.
Yeah.
It was a good... These are really, really great collections. But I kind of just wish it was just all Kirby stuff. And, like, and then maybe the backup is by a new creator.
Yeah.
Then they probably wouldn't sell as many.
Well, this is, like, we said, like, a little while ago, what's Marvel doing to celebrate? And someone called James Perry emailed us in to say, yes, Marvel is celebrating Kirby's 100th. Which I should have... I should have realized. Marvel are doing all these great True Believers Kirby number ones, where they're doing sort of the first issue of things like Journey into Mystery and sort of major Kirby works for a low, low price of like $1 an issue or something like that. So check those out at your local comic book store, because that's a cool thing.
If you just want the classic Kirby stuff without other people trying to pretend to write like Kirby.
Yeah.
Which we're going to get more of in this episode later on when we talk about DC books.
Woo!
But before we get there, we've got some other number ones to get through.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new one from Image, from writer Doug Wagner, who also wrote Plastic, which was an Image book that finished this week, mm-hmm. much to my surprise.
Mm.
But what's the saying about something dies and something is born?
A man dies and a man is born. I don't know what that saying is.
A comic dies and a comic is born. We get The Hard Place, issue 1, by Doug Wagner, with art by Nick Rummel and colors by Carly Kirchhoff. And this is a where Plastic is a very over-the-top kind of...
I don't know how to describe Plastic.
Yeah. but it's still a crime book. This is a crime book as well, but this is from the point of view of someone who's just gotten out of prison after he was a getaway driver, basically. This is him returning to his life and trying to stay away from crime, but also trying to make things right with the people who he used to work for, so he knows they won't come after him now that he's out of jail.
I really like this.
Yeah, this is really, really fun. There are very broad moments of, you know, someone getting out of jail kind of drama.
Mm.
But I think, you know, those are fun tropes to kind of revisit in comic format.
Totally.
And the story moved quickly enough that it didn't really linger on these things. It would kind of just be like one panel of something you've kind of seen before in a comic, and then would just quickly move the story forward, which is good.
Yep, and the art was very cool with some very cool sort of stylistic coloring choices. To show the flashbacks and stuff like that, which was very nice.
Yeah, I really like this art, Nick Rummel. He's going to be someone that I watch. It's very, like you said, it's very, very stylized, you know, urban art. He was a good choice for this story, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's another one. I think Doug Wagner's coming out as definitely a writer that I will be keeping tabs on.
Yeah, I like Doug Wagner. So far, so good.
Yeah, totally. And we'll be reviewing the last issue of Plastic later on in the episode. Finally, we got two books from Marvel this week, two number ones. The first of which is the new Generations book.
Mm-hmm.
This one was Generations The Thunder, featuring the Thor and the unworthy Thor, written by Jason Aaron, with art by Mahmoud Azra, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Joe Sabino. This is basically the coming together of Jane Foster as Thor and then the unworthy Thor. So, you know, the Odinson already exists in this Marvel universe. So this is actually Jane Foster going way, way, way back to a Thor who has never actually... He's not actually been able to lift the hammer in the first place. We've seen Jason Aaron write this version of the character in his run long ago, and it was really fun to revisit this kind of more arrogant, war, bloodthirsty kind of Thor.
Also, just like he's such a doof. I love like young Thor as this kind of like dumb jock bro. It's very pleasing. I would love a whole series of this bro.
And of course, you know, like when paired with someone as like Jane Foster, who has so much humility, it's a really good combo. And like she thinks he's a goof, but also has the utmost respect for what he becomes.
Mm.
This actually revisits a moment from Rick Remender's Uncanny Avengers run,
mm-hmm.
when Thor fought Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see the two Thors teaming up to fight Apocalypse. But the battle is not really, you know, the main part of this story. It's about, like, deception via a very disgusting-looking Loki. And I think this definitely has ramifications for the future of Jason Aaron's Thor run as well,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really, really cool to see in a, you know, in a one shot like this.
Also, I liked how many sort of thought bubbles were used in this.
Yes, definitely. He really does a great job of mostly with Jane, showing what Jane thinks. Oh, Shatterstar has the hiccup.
Yeah, so can you hear the little squeak toy? That's an actual baby.
Is he got the sleep hiccups or the awake?
Oh no,
hiccups?
He has the awake angry hiccups.
Right. I also love that this sets up the Marvel Legacy number one that Jason Aaron's working on, because in this one, Odin, Thor's father, has a relationship with the Phoenix.
That was so good. Him being like, oh, the Phoenix, I miss when we dated. The Phoenix like, leave me alone, Odin. That was good. I enjoyed that.
So I think of the Generations books, this is easily the most essential of the bunch so far. And after getting the really good issue of Wolverines last week as well, these are under a good roll.
Yep, agreed.
We also got the Dr. Aphra annual from Marvel this week.
I see.
Is written by...
This is quite fun, not doing the podcast face-to-face, because I can't see in the pile what stuff I didn't read that you did read. I didn't read this.
This is the last number one I read. Did you read any others?
Yeah, I did, from Valiant.
Oh, I didn't get the fucking Valiant one.
Sucked in.
Damn it, Scott.
Damn it.
The wrong Scott packed my comics.
Oh, see, that's your first mistake. Never get the wrong Scott.
Written by Kieran Gillen with Mark Laming and Will Sliney on art.
Cool name.
This was actually a very fun little annual. basically it tells the kind of origin story, or one of the early stories of the Wookiee on Dr. Aphra's, like in her crew, what's his name? Black Kurosantan.
Something like that.
You know, that real, real aggressive Wookiee that she has.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a really fun story featuring these two reporters that really want to interview him about, you know, his early days and how he came to be the warrior that he became. I thought this was just a very fun little one shot that I think, you know, I think these Star Wars comics are better when they're one and done's, when they become that serialized, you know, big cliffhangery nonsense that comics is more prone to doing. It doesn't feel as much as like Star Wars, so it's fun reading a kind of contained story like this.
Mm. Cool.
Tell me about the Valiant book that I missed. I totally intended to pick up.
So I read War Mother issue 1 from Fred Van Lente and Steven Segovia with colors by Elmer Santos. This is one of the books set in the 4001 AD universe. And so I think it's from post that 4001 AD sort of event with Harada and all that kind of stuff. Valiant people will hopefully know what I'm talking about. But this was a really good, fun book about a woman who is the sort of leader of this community that live in an area called the Grove. But unfortunately, supplies are running out. And so she has to lead them to hopefully a new location. And this is just like really good fun post sort of dystopian sci-fi goodness. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a really good jumping on point for people who don't know about that much about the Valiant universe.
They're getting really good at that.
Yeah.
At creating very good jumping on points. I think they're realizing how many more people are interested in picking up their books. And I think doing great jumping on points is definitely them, you know, listening to their, their potential readers.
Yeah, agreed. It's a good one.
Yeah, cool.
Definitely recommend people pick it up, and I'm going to be continuing to read this. And it's got that sick little preview of Eternity in the back. Good lord, that looks good.
The next Matt Kint and Trevor Hairsign event.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that one. Awesome. So those are our reviews of all the number ones that came out last week. Did you read them? Did you like them? Let us know. You can come and join us online, facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast, and chat away about all the number ones that we may have missed or that you enjoyed. Now, Siobhan, normally we would roll a dice to see whether we review Image, DC, or Marvel yet, but this week I realized, you know, time is finite in general, but also with this episode. We don't have as long as we usually would. So I want to talk about all the other publishers first.
Okay, cool.
Because they were all my favorite books this week.
Nice.
So I want to kick off this review session with, and we will get to DC and Marvel, I promise, and Image, but Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Oh, yeah.
Issue number 8. I mean, first of all, the fact that we got another one so soon after issue 7.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like it was like, you know, less than 2 months ago that we got issue 7, but there was a massive gap between issues before that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the horror comic featuring Sabrina the Teenage Witch, put out through Archie Horror, written by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa and Robert Hack on art. Basically, Sabrina has fallen in love with a boy who then discovers that she is a witch, but she is not like the kind of fun, has a talking cat and can do like, you know, dumb flying magic stuff like you usually see in Archie book. She is a for real witch that kills people and has rituals and drinks blood and has evil witch parents, witch stepmothers. What are they?
Her aunts.
Her aunts.
And some serious Lovecraft vibes.
That's right. And so her new boyfriend discovers that she is a witch in the middle of a ritual and is murdered. And so she has used very dark witchcraft to bring him back. And she hasn't really brought who she thinks she has back. This is a very sinister comic that manages to be kind of fun and lighthearted like you would expect from an Archie book, while also being extremely gruesome and unsettling at the same time.
Completely horrifying. I love how much they're really into like a creepy incest vibe for this sort of like in this book, and then also the Afterlife with Archie book. There were some creepy incest vibes in that as well. They really toe that line quite a lot, and it's very unsettling.
Yeah, it's. I also love that they directly reference Afterlife with Archie in this, when she walks past Jughead and sees a vision of him in another world, which is the Afterlife with Archie world, which I thought was really, really fun. And everything about this book, the Robert Hack's art is actually getting better and better.
Absolutely. I love how like how much he's sort of photo referenced Zac Efron for for Harvey Kinkle.
Oh, yeah.
It just looks so exactly like Zac Efron, but I'm really into it. I think that's like that's a hilarious good call. And the like gross, like when you see sort of Hilda and Zelda's true form, and they're like proper gross witches with like hairy armpits and like claws and fangs. So good.
Yeah, like really, like yeah, like big parts of their faces kind of revealed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really grotesque and excellent. His monster stuff, like you said, is very Lovecraftian and very cool.
Mm-hmm.
This is far and away my favorite book that I read this week.
Yeah, good fun.
And, I never learn not to read what I know is going to be my favorite book first,
because
then it makes the rest of the comics harder.
Huge mistake.
but a book that I loved just as much as Sabrina, almost as much, was Black Hammer issue 12.
What a good book.
Out through Dark Horse. This was written by Jeff Lemire with fill-in art by David Rubin. And this basically was a story all about the daughter of Black Hammer,
mm-hmm.
who is one of the superheroes stranded in the town that all of the heroes have been stranded in this series.
Except he died.
Yeah, that's right. So we find out he's dead in the very first issue. She doesn't know that. And so this basically tells her life, 10 years of her life from the funeral of her father to basically like her finding his secret superhero lab and finding a recorded message of him telling her to just give it up, to not to let go of any attachment she has to the Black Hammer and live her own life. Of course, she's not going to do that because we know that she's actually now moved to the... she's made her way to the same place that all the other heroes are stranded. I loved that the character of Dr. Star, who mm-hmm. is like an older superhero who's assisting her, is his name is Jimmy Robinson.
Yeah, that was cute.
So, which is a clear reference to James Robinson, who is, you know, quite renowned for his love of the Golden Age superheroes. He even wrote a great series called The Golden Age, and of course Starboy as well. So his character name of Dr. Star is a direct reference to that. That was a cute little homage from Lemire to it. Another great writer.
This is such a fun comic because it is like, it's by itself, you could recommend this to just about anyone. But if you are a sort of comic book fan and you have a knowledge of the Golden Age and you have a knowledge of sort of comic books, Western American comic books in general, you get little bonus fun bits and pieces like that. It's really good.
Yeah, definitely. And David Rubin's art, like, ugh. I just... And also, he does all his own colors, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
He does usually in his books. He's fantastic. The gradients that he uses, you know, just from one side of the panel to the other, it's never the flat. His art is alive.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
Agreed.
There are a few better fill-in artists than David Rubin, that's for sure.
Mm.
Also from Dark Horse this week, I read Depth, issue number 17 by Matt Kint and Charlene Kint. Are you still reading this? Or
no, I've fully fallen off.
This was a brilliant issue that basically told the backstory between the main character and another one of the characters who's stranded underwater. Again, with the usual side of complete misery and heartbreak that Matt Kint is akin to filling all of his stories with. But, this book started out as what I thought was going to be quite a short mystery tale. But in delving into the backstories of all the characters who were trapped in the sea, it's become quite an epic. And I doubt that this is going to be ending anytime soon. We mentioned Sabrina earlier, and I should have immediately seed from that to Archie, issue number 23.
I was going to say.
written by Mark Waid, and very excitingly featuring Audrey Mock on art. Or Mock, how do you say her name? I don't know.
I would say Mock.
Colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick. And this continues the story of Betty getting injured in a car accident.
I totally called it.
Yep, I think you did.
Great job, me.
But this was her finding out that she needs to basically she's paralyzed and she's going to have to learn how to walk again.
I did think that like the ending where they spell out BC and a big love heart in lights was super lame.
Yeah, super duper lame.
Who's that helping, Archie? You're so shit at this.
But this was basically Archie trying to do something beautiful for Betty because she's done so much for him and all of Riverdale, and she needs to know that all of Riverdale is there to support her. I mean, I would have just thought that just having everyone come to visit her in the hospital would be enough, but instead he accidentally organizes a massive candlelight vigil that she can't even see.
Yeah, so, and also, like, who does candlelight vigils for people who are still alive? I find that whole... This is very odd. And this is a really...
Wade misses the mark occasionally.
This is a really weird way to take this book. Like, I don't know. I feel weird about this story arc.
Look, at least we know that this isn't going to be a permanent change for Betty. And she'll be mending cars and walking around in no time.
Absolutely.
But I got to just say it's so good to see Audrey Mock on this book after having some not as impressive art the last few issues. She suits this book really well.
Agreed.
And the Greg Smallwood cover was excellent.
Yes.
Did you get that one with the big question mark?
Yep. Yes, I did. Cool. That was really nice.
Another of our favorite books every time it comes out is Heathen. And we got issue 5 through Vault Comics this week, written by Natasha Alterici. She writes and does the art, colors, inks, and letters are done by Rachel Deering. And this is the excellent kind of Norse mythology book that is about a woman who's been shunned from her village for fancying other women, and to redeem herself, or I guess kind of do something with her life, she is trying to free a god.
Yep.
And this was like, this is almost a one shot, this issue of her basically she needs to go. She needs to travel up north in untamed waters that no sailor will dare cross. And she manages to convince the sailors to take her on her voyage by getting some mermaids, some very evil, bloodthirsty mermaids who have stolen another god's coat that allows him to take the forms of different animals. And she manages to convince them to be her guide by giving them apples.
This was really lovely. And it was a really cute issue.
Unbelievable issue. And I think Natasha Alterici is, just from, you know, these 5 issues of Heathen, I really hope that she gets the chance to actually write a Thor book for Marvel at some point.
Yeah.
Because she has a great understanding of the mythology, and also just her character work is great. Being able to write, you know, such fantastic creatures without it being so kind of fey and kind of over the top. Her characters are very grounded, personality wise.
And I'm excited to see where this band, like, there's a whole sort of troop of sort of almost female pirates. I'm very, very geeked to see where they go.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book. And I hope it goes for a long time. I hope, lots of people start reading it. Cause her art is phenomenal too. And beautiful muted color set too.
Really good fun.
Yeah, she's a great talent, Natasha Alterici, that I hope I see lots and lots from in the future.
Agreed.
Over to Aftershock now for the 5th issue of Shipwreck by Warren Ellis and Phil Hester.
And it's finally starting to make sense.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? This book began with a man from our Earth shipwrecked on an Earth that was nothing like ours. And we've kind of been learning more and more about how he got there.
What
technology. That's right. And the technology that he possesses to potentially go back. I thought this was really cool.
Yeah.
The rest of his art is excellent.
Yeah, there were some really, incredible pages with incredible colors from Mark Englert.
Yep. It's a good, it's a great example of a Warren Ellis book that doesn't entirely make sense for 3 to 4 issues, and then suddenly it all comes together and you're very happy that you stuck with it.
Absolutely.
Super rewarding. Finally, from Valiant. Definitely. From Valiant, Exo Manowar issue number 6 finally sees what's his name? Arik.
Mm-hmm.
Call upon his armor that he's been stashing away in a cupboard at his wife's house. But, I like this, he's in this world where he can't really trust anybody.
Mm.
And basically, no matter where he is, he's always called upon to be the great warrior. And this is him kind of accepting that and doing what needs to be done. But in order to do it, he needs the armor that he's tried to live so long without.
Very good. Good summation.
And, the painted artwork by Doug Braithwaite. Again, this is written by Matt Kent.
Mm-hmm.
Colors by Diego Rodriguez. It's very special, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like
is it painted?
It's, I don't know. I mean, hard to say. I would say it's probably digitally colored, but it's still like definitely gives you that sort of Conan-esque, but future Conan.
Future Conan with future robot Conan parts and laser swords.
So good.
Yeah. Such a fun series.
I read one more from Boom. Oh, yeah? I missed the first issue, but the cover was so intriguing. I was like, "Ooh, I simply must." Sisters of Sorrow. Did you read the first issue of that?
Yeah, did not like the first issue of that.
Right,
at all.
Okay. I quite like the second issue. I didn't really know what the vibe was. Are these women all living in like a shelter together?
Yeah.
Then they decide to go kill
people.
Which prompted
that week's guest Wayne to say, "How come there are no men in the shelter?"
Nice. Classic Wayne.
Not missing the point at all, Wayne.
Good job, Wayne. Anyway, this is some sick, like, exploitation-y revenge fantasy nonsense where they dress up as nuns. Pretty silly.
Yeah, so
very
here's
silly.
The thing. The first issue, they didn't dress up as nuns.
Right.
So on the cover, it was like a nun with a gun, and I was like, hell yeah, nuns with guns. And that didn't give me what I wanted. And it didn't really feel quite exploitation-y enough.
Right.
It just felt very... broad and lazily written.
Right. Well, this issue I think was probably better. I do wish that they were actually nuns, but no, they just dress up as nuns. But it was fine.
Someone give us a Nuns with Guns comic.
I found my calling.
Someone. So those are our other publishers' reviews. It felt fun starting the episode with them instead of leaving them till last. Now we're going to roll the dice and burn through these other books.
Nice.
I rolled a 4, which in my head I'd already decided is Marvel. So we're going to do Marvel first, and then we're going to do Image, and then DC.
Cool.
So let's start off with Marvel, Secret Empire number 9. We are one issue away from the end of Secret Empire, except for the final epilogue issue.
Right.
So there's two more issues,
left.
This was written by Nick Spencer with returning... artist Lino Francis Yu, Rod Reyes, and Joe Bennett on art.
Always good to have three different artists in one issue.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Rod Reyes stuff works because he's doing flashbacky stuff. But I really don't like Lino Yu's stuff on this. I feel bad for him because it's obvious he hasn't had the time that he normally gets to work on a book. You can see a lot of facial features and things left out of his artwork. Mm. But from a story point of view, I think this is actually wrapping up quite well.
Yeah, they're doing, like, it's sort of nice to see, like, Nick Spencer's clearly always had an endpoint in sight.
That's right.
And it's nice to see all that stuff kind of coming together. And it is nice to have a book that's kind of trying to make a point, you know?
What is that point?
Fascism is bad.
Oh, he's so brave.
But also, like, you know, obviously this is a very, like, contemporarily relevant book about sort of power and, you know, heroes not being what they seem and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's pretty good. I think it's a pretty good fun book.
My one criticism was that Black Panther was not the badass that I like him to be in this.
You like the toughest T'Challa.
Yeah, that's right. I like.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I like no one can beat him in battle, no matter what. I like see Wakanda and die T'Challa, but you know, we see most of him captured by Captain America. He does escape in spectacular fashion, but not spectacular enough.
I liked the little Sharon Carter thing as well. That was cool.
My favorite part of this book actually came from two of the villains, Black Ant and Taskmaster, just deciding to switch sides when they realize that they're on the losing side.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a great moment of comedy in an otherwise quite serious issue.
I like it when they call him Hair Gel Hulk. That was pretty funny.
That's right. I also think it's, you know, it's cool that, you know, normally we get a really strong start to big events, then you get the filler issues, and then you get a really disappointing ending.
Bendis.
And as far as I can tell, this is not going to, this is, you know, we got the quite intriguing, fun start. We definitely got the lull in the middle of the issues, but this seems to be wrapping up quite strongly.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost don't care if it doesn't have any ramifications for the future of Marvel, if they just end it as a good story, Secret Wars did.
Mm-hmm.
Hickman, yeah, I'll be satisfied.
Agreed.
And more events should try and do that. It's less about moving things forward in the universe than it is just telling a good story first and foremost.
That would be nice.
Also in the Eventscape this week, we got Edge of Venomverse, issue number 5.
Oh, I didn't read this. I only have 2 other Marvel books.
Really? That's hilarious.
Sorry.
So this was written by Clay McLeod Chapman, who's a writer that I'm not familiar with. The art, Siobhan, was by James Stoker.
Oh, for Pete's sake, Siobhan.
Tell why you didn't pick it up. Deadpool's on the front. This is all about Deadpool fusing with Venom. So we got a Deadpool and Venom book drawn by James Stoker.
God damn
the
it.
Art was incredible. The writing, I did not like one bit.
Oh, well. Sorry, you can just look at it.
Let's hear a little guest review from Patreon reviewer Tom Burton.
Thanks, Tom.
You can become a Patreon reviewer by hitting up our Patreon page, patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast, and supporting to the contributor level. Tom says of this book, "I wasn't very excited to read this comic. I feel like it's easy to write Deadpool in a way that makes you roll your eyes more than you laugh. But man, I had so much fun reading this. This series keeps going back and forth for me with fun books, but also real boring and uninteresting ones. This issue had me smiling almost the whole way through. There were so many points of this book that I loved and enjoyed. The Venom symbiote turning into a heart when he sees Deadpool was wonderful. And Deadpool spraying a lady in the face with his blood after she cuts off his arm was hilarious to me. I suppose even though so far the series has been hits and misses, it's done its job because I'll definitely be reading Venomverse after this. Tom, I agree with you. It has its ups and downs. Even this issue had its ups and downs for me. Its ups were the art was phenomenal. Its downs were the writing was kind of dumb. But
who wrote the art? Who wrote the art? Good.
I've never heard of this guy. His name is Clay McLeod Chapman.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom, for that review. Much more concise than I could ever be. what other two Marvel books did you read?
I read Doctor Strange.
Let's talk about that one.
Yay. Great art.
Dennis Hopeless. I think this is the last Dennis Hopeless issue of Doctor Strange. Yeah. Dennis Hopeless and art by Nico Henrichon, who did the colors on this book too.
Extremely nice art.
Yeah, this is the big kind of team up of Doctor Strange, Kingpin, Jessica Drew as Spider Woman, and Ben is it Ulrich?
Yeah.
Oh, Ulrich, yeah. From ex Daily Planet, now freelance writer.
Slash
but also
magical sword guy.
for this arc only, as we see them all kind of use magic, what little magic is left in the darkened version of Manhattan that's been part of Secret Empire to take on Baron Mordo. This is just a big, fun, silly magic adventure book.
I liked how silly Baron Mordo was. This was like
absolutely.
Silly version of him. I was into it.
I thought this is super fun, and I wish that Dennis Hopeless was able to stay with the character post Secret Empire because he had a great grasp of kind of Jason Aaron's take on Doctor Strange, but also gave it his own spin. Mm. Next month we get the first issue written by Donny Cates.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, I'll be sticking around to see what he does with this series, because it's been fun having Doctor Strange every month.
Agreed. And I like how classic the Kevin Nolan cover for next month is. I think it's Kevin Nolan.
Agreed.
Looks like him.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely. What else did you read?
I read Punisher.
Punisher. This
issue
is 15. One of the last issues of Becky Cloonan. Becky Cloonan's long-running, well, 15 issues, long for Marvel, running Punisher series. It started out, we got 12 issues of a long-running story, and then the last three issues have just been one-shots of Frank returning to New York, and these are just like little one-and-done adventures of him in New York with different artists for each story. Art on this one was by Matt Horak, with colors by Lee Lurage.
Doing a very good Steve Dillon sort of inspired...
Definitely.
Punisher story. I really liked this. I love little like just one shot stories for Punisher, and this was really good fun.
Yeah, definitely. There was a kind of article up on AV Club this week that was kind of celebrating all of the work that Becky Cloonan has done with her Punisher run, and just saying what a great take that she had on the character. And then I was very sad to see in the comments a lot of angry men disagreeing and saying it was the worst run of the Punisher ever.
People are so boring.
I don't think this is that different to other Punisher runs. I think she has a really, very good handle on the character. I just think that they're like, you know, she decided not to take it down the Frank Castle as a complete monster vibe that lots of people do. She's trying to, you know, not make him relatable, but just kind of put him in situations where you understand what he's doing a bit more.
But I like he was... He's pretty crazy in this.
Yeah, that's true. He loves murdering.
Yeah.
This is all about him taking down someone who has been murdering people by pushing them in front of trains.
Yeah.
Which is no good, but I love that he has like a team up in this issue with a homeless guy that living in the train tunnels.
Yeah.
Who's like an ex cop. I thought this was great.
There was really
great,
funny great little issue. Touches as well. Like at the end, he celebrates by having a coffee out of his Nelson and Murdoch coffee mug, and he puts his feet up on his desk, and he has little Punisher skulls on the soles of his shoes. That's some funny little visual gags. Shoes, there.
They're slippers to me, right? That's his like reclining slippers. Gorgeous.
So nice.
I want those. Please make those, Marvel. I will wear them for sure. So I'll burn through a few books that I read that Siobhan didn't.
Nice.
I've got three. Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe again. Continued this kind of, you know, dumb Deadpool killing everybody in the Marvel Universe book, written by Cullen Bunn with excellent art by Dalibor Telazic. And I think that's what makes me enjoy the book so much, is that whenever Deadpool kills a bunch of heroes, he hallucinates that he is kind of like in a differently stylized comic or cartoon. So we got like a kind of like manga kind of robot section as he takes out a bunch of characters, and then he kills like Power Pack, Ms. Marvel, Moon Girl, and Devil Dinosaur, but you don't see that happen. You just see him playing hide and seek with him in like this all ages kind of drawn thing, and then it cuts to the real world and there are all these crowd going, oh my god, why, they're just kids. So yeah, I'm really enjoying this. It's very silly, but it knows it's silly, and that's the best kind of silly.
Absolutely.
I also read the fourth issue of James Robinson's Cable book, which is him kind of time traveling to try and find these parts of some weird time sword before the villain Conquest finds them. So we've had him like go through different ages. This sees him basically Conquest has teamed up with Rasputin.
Nice. Oh man, I'm sad I didn't get around to this one.
Is it Rasputin or Rasputin?
I don't know.
Russian listeners, let us know. We actually have... I looked at the stats of where we have listeners. We actually have quite a few Russian listeners.
Really? So
shouts to Russia.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, you'll be like... It's really weird. Like, Sweden and Germany have, like thousands of people listening from there.
That's... So, what?
Yeah.
Hello.
Very, very surprising. But, yeah, if you were Swedish or German, let us know.
Yeah, please.
I'm really keen to hear from, like, you know, if you think you... You know, because like, we expect listeners in, you know, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, America, UK. But if you live outside of there and listen, let us know.
Yeah.
Especially if we continually mispronounce the names of people who are from your countries or miss references that are important to you. Just let us know.
Yes, please.
As angrily as you like.
Yes, please.
But yeah, I haven't totally been enjoying this series, but it suddenly everything clicked into place, this issue. And I'm excited to see, like, basically Cable's been chasing after Conquest this whole time, and this issue ended with him knowing where the final piece of the Time Sword is, and he said, you chase me now. And so he goes to a land of the dinosaurs, time of the dinosaurs, which is where the kind of final part of this battle is going to take place. Real fun.
Nice.
Finally, I read Daredevil issue number 25, which sees Matt Murdock go to the High Court in order to finalize this case that he's been trying to put together to make superheroes able to testify without revealing their identity, which he thinks will stop crime forever. And the biggest person opposing that is Wilson Fisk. So he hires Tombstone to basically take out Matt Murdock if attorney that he's hired, like a very good attorney, isn't able to counter the case, you know, the legal way. So Tombstone is his plan B. And there's a great moment where Tombstone kind of betrays Kingpin just because he can. And I love the character of Tombstone, and Charles Soule wrote him really, really well in this issue. It looks like we get a nice, fun, angry Kingpin in the next issue, which is a very good kind of Kingpin.
Cool.
Those are our Marvel reviews, which means we're going to talk about Image books next. You want to pick the ones that you've read first? I reckon, before I take away your pick, Underwinter issue 6 was the final issue of this first arc,
mm-hmm.
Written and drawn by Ray Fawkes. This is another very unsettling horror comic that was basically kind of Ray Fawkes doing very Bill Sienkiewicz mm-hmm. kind of style painted work. With it's about a string quartet who are made to perform blindfolded to an entity,
A scary bird god thing.
Yeah, and everything turned to shit.
Yep.
And this is a really horrific farewell to these characters.
And it's so astonishing that this is just like the first arc. Like, where is this going to go next? All the characters are dead. Everyone's dead.
Yeah, totally. So look, I reckon this will read really well in trade. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to reread it when it all comes out in a nice, easy to pick up trade.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Image always put out those very cheap first trades. Mm-hmm. Definitely pick this up if you are a fan of comics that are a little left of center. Mm-hmm. This is pretty, you know, pretty different to what the other comics we read. But it was really captivating, really weird and cool. And in October we get Underwinter, A Field of Feathers. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
same. Ray Fawkes, thank you for this very cool book. We also got a bizarre V end at the end of Renato Jones Freelancer number 3. Did you read this?
Yeah, is that the end? No, it's not.
I don't think so. But it ends with the now president basically firing nukes on what looks like most of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a nuclear explosion.
That just says the end in the middle of it.
The end. Boom.
I mean, this book is so interesting because, like, how close up to the release date was he doing edits? And does he just see the future? Because
yes,
this book it's predicts a huge amount about what's going on in American politics right now.
Yeah, totally. With, Donald Trump being somewhat of a puppet for the much more evil people that are on his cabinet, and then the kind of hiring and firing of people that have nothing to do with the things they represent. It's all in here.
And problems with North Korea, and the Boy Scouts get a mention, and China and the Kremlin, and it's all very
but weirdly
hilariously
it's not re- it's not really heavy-handed.
No,
like it's quite lighthearted and fun to kind of have this element to the book.
Yes, it's a very silly social commentary, but I'm really into it.
I was a little bit confused with the flashback /
mm-hmm.
acid. I don't know, like vague hallucination flashback thing in the middle of the book.
Mm.
But this is the kind of book that you just kind of roll with it
yeah,
and keep reading.
And you just have to go with it. Point.
Yeah, Kyle Carr and Andrews writes this book, and it's a really fun one to read, and it's a great one to pick up in single issue format because there are all these fake ads for these disgusting products that he gets people to model for, and they're very funny.
Yeah, like wealth care, very funny. It's good. Enjoy it.
Another book that featured a massive explosion at the end of it,
nice,
a nuclear one of that was The Dying and the Dead.
Oh my
Jonathan
goodness,
Hickman.
What a good issue!
And Ryan Bodenheim. Now, this is a book that has the most hilariously long delayed between issues. I think it was between issues 3 and 4.
Yeah, I think Hickman's to the doing point it where on purpose. Just to upset people.
I have no idea what happened in those issues.
No.
One day I will go back and read.
But the thing that's great is that the last two issues have read so strong. Like, I don't even remember what happened in the last issue, but
yep.
They're so good as just standalone little one-shots.
That's right. So this is a tale of soldiers fighting in a war and them trying to make sense of why we fight and what war means.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, they're as far as advancing the plot of the overall story that Dying and the Dead tries to tell, it doesn't really do that so much as just kind of sets the tone of what Hickman is doing with this series. There are preview pages for what's coming up next in Dying and the Dead.
I don't know who any of those people are.
No, but it's like it makes me realize, oh yeah, there's all this supernatural stuff to this to this series, which isn't on display at all in this issue. It's a very grounded war book with incredible, absolutely incredible art, and colors by Ryan Bodenheim and Michael Garland.
Really beautiful,
and great lettering by Russ Wooten as well. This is a sick issue, one of my favorites of the week too.
Agreed.
Did you read Eternal Empire?
I did.
Issue number 4.
I did. I like this.
By Sarah Vaughan and Jonathan Luna, who are best known for their work on Alex and Ada together. This is about a dystopian future or another world where people are enslaved and two people from different tribes that have been enslaved by the same...
Group. Yeah. People with tails. I didn't realize those guys had tails.
They got tails. But the two people from these separate tribes escape where they're being held, they develop like kind of superpowers that they're able to kind of make these fire swords come out of their hands. It's a weirdly sweet and kind of insular kind of story for something so fantastic.
Absolutely. It's like this bizarrely grounded high fantasy, which I'm very into.
The Jonathan Luna and Sarah Vaughan are very good at character
relationships
in their books. Relationships, exactly. And we see them kind of practicing with their powers and working up to taking on some of the bad guys that have been enslaving other tribes. I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, really fun.
It's a very, very unique series.
And really beautiful art. It looks great. And they've done such a lot of really solid world building. So they don't need to do a lot of exposition. You just kind of go along with it.
Generation Gone, issue number 2.
Oh no, I missed that.
Written by Alice Scott and art by Andre Lima Arajo. I won't spoil this for you or anyone listening, but this is the book about three teenagers who hack into the equivalent of like NASA, someone feeds them a code that basically unlocks something in their brain that gives them superpowers. So now one of them can fly, one of them is really tough and like Luke Cage, basically. His skin can't break. And then the other one, we haven't worked out what his superpower is. But this is them kind of learning what their powers are, figuring out what to do next. We also see from the other side the man who has sent them the code and the shady government agency that he works for dealing with the repercussions of this code. I really enjoy this. The art's really fun. The only thing I don't like is how heavy-handed they are with the girl's boyfriend, like one of the three, is just a real big dick.
Yeah.
And like he's sexist and he's racist and like...
You don't understand like why they're dating.
Yeah, exactly. We know that it's going to make him become a bad guy at some point, but it's like it's a little bit too obvious. But there's enough other very cool, interesting stuff, especially with the guy who created the code in the first place and his backstory, which is tragic. But we learn, basically that his plan is to basically give all children... powers.
Cool. I'm into it.
Yeah.
Unless it's going to be like that Reign of the Supermen story arc from Teen Titans. Oh,
that wasn't great. So I really enjoyed that. Did you read the 5th issue of Redneck?
No, I didn't get up to it. I missed a couple of things this week, guys, as is becoming Donny apparent. Cates, sorry.
Donny Cates, Lysandro, Estherin, and D. Kniff out through Skybound on Image. The Vampire book out through Image kind of sees the... the guy who's not quite as powerful a vampire as the others that was kind of turned regrettably. It's not as old as the other vampires as well. We see him kind of come into his own and kind of become the hero in this issue. And we learn who the real bad guy is. And it won't shock you when you realize it, but...
Is it the little girl? It either.
No, it's not.
Oh. I thought that would be
swing
shocking.
And a miss. Shirtless Bear Fighter number 3.
So fun.
By
this book is more fun than I'm should kind of, give it credit.
I'm getting over it.
What do you mean? It's endless jokes about fighting bears.
I kind of just wish it was like one issue.
Yeah. The concept does have its limitations. But it's silly enough.
If they just let us know, if they let us know that there was like 2 or 3 more issues left, I'd be happier with it. But knowing that this could be like a 60 issue run is actually a bit terrifying.
Is that what they're planning?
No, I doubt it. But like, I don't know. I just want to know it's going to end soon.
Yeah. Fair enough.
There are some funny jokes in this issue though. Yeah. Finally, I read Lazarus X plus 66, which is the kind of fill-in mini series that we're getting while regular artist Michael Lark takes a break. It's written by Greg Rucker. This one has art by Mac Chater, who is so fucking prolific at the moment. He's been doing Briggsland.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing a bunch of some of the art in the Black Panther and the Crew recently as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the full issue on this one, which kind of gives us brings us up to speed with one of the other families in this in the world of the Lazarus, and we catch up with the Lazarus that was forced to strike the main Lazarus of this book. Lazarus is like the different families have someone who is like their protector that can never die, really. It was a really, really interesting seeing how the other families in this world work compared to the Carlisles that we see in the main book. And we see yet another kind of tragic backstory of someone that's forced to do a bunch of shit that he doesn't want just because of the state of this world.
Nice.
Now, Siobhan, I left this till last.
Yep.
This is the fifth and final surprise final issue of a book that we loved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic, written by Doug Wagner, Daniel Hilliard on art, and colors by Laura Martin. Indescribable,
yeah.
you described it as earlier. It's about a man who is in love with a plastic doll,
mm-hmm.
and she is taken away from him,
mm-hmm.
And he goes on a killing rampage
and he's
teams up with
a former, like we assume he's a former serial killer who was never caught.
Oh, I assumed he was a former like agent.
I thought that they were talking about a serial killer who had like put people's heads in plastic. In a couple of issues, right. Again, who was never caught.
Right. Okay. Cool. You're always probably right. Now that it's all finished, I'm definitely going to go back and reread it all because I think I read each issue going like, oh my god, I can't believe this book is so ridiculous.
Sorry.
That's all right.
It was a cranky baby.
Oh, Barbara. Okay. Siobhan is actually like managing to talk on Skype while holding a phone as a microphone.
And a baby,
which you've been feeding on and off throughout the entire episode.
I'm very talented. Like,
you are very talented. We should like be like the only comic book podcast that features regular breastfeeding.
Absolutely.
But this issue of Plastic, it ended quite abruptly, I thought. I was like, oh shit, that's the end?
But it also, like, it ended very satisfyingly. Like, there was real character development and, like, sort of closure for everyone involved.
I thought it definitely took a way more comedic finish than I was expecting.
Oh yeah? I don't know. There was a lot of death. It was quite sad.
Like, 4 characters are destroyed in a pretty hilarious panel.
That's true.
it was just very sudden. I was like, okay, that's the end. All right.
But I I didn't feel like it was rushed personally. And I thought that, like, I think this is a nice, you know, little package that you could give to someone or recommend to someone. I don't know how or what the person would think of you if you did give it to them. But I really liked this.
Yeah. No, it was a satisfying ending, just a sudden one.
I would love to see this creative team do more stuff together again because they clearly have terrifying minds.
Awesome. Did you read, we're talking about DC books now, read issue 13 of The Hellblazer?
Absolutely not.
Well, guess why I did.
Why?
There's a new creative team.
Oh!
And the writer of this book is now Tim Seeley.
Oh, that's a good call.
And without giving much away of where he's going with this, this felt the most in line with the Hellblazer that I know and love from Vertigo that it's been since he became a DC character.
Oh, that's good.
I think Tim Seeley did a really great job of balancing the kind of, you know, drunk Britishness of the character with the gross, grotesque horror side. And just, you know, he is a bit of a, like, irredeemable dick sometimes as well. Mm. Like, that's a very important part of the character. He doesn't want the good guys to win all the time. And Tim Seeley definitely got that without making him, like, unrelentingly horrible. Jesus Marino did the art on it, which is a really, really standout too. Great colors by Carrie Strachan. Strachan. Yeah, it's off to a great start. And I know I said when Hellblazer came back from Rebirth, I'm like, this is way better than the Constantine series. Definitely a great start. And then that got really boring really fast. I don't think this is going to, like you know, that was all about a very silly... It wasn't very interesting. But this seems to be really building on the character a lot more and kind of different characters in his life as well. So, if you're a Constantine or Hellblazer fan, definitely give this one a shot.
Nice.
What DC books did you read, Siobhan?
Okay, so I read 4 DC books.
Yep, cool. Let's do them. Let's go.
Okay. So I read issue 14 of Batgirl, which I know you don't read.
I actually read this one.
Oh, nice. So this is Hope Larson with Chris Wildgoose on pencils. I'm just flicking through to remember what the hell happened. Oh, I like this issue. I thought this was a good issue.
Yeah, me too.
This was good fun. This is Babs and Dick back together again to investigate a crime that potentially has something to do with their history. Into it.
Yeah, and the best part of this book came from the flashbacks of them in their early days.
Yeah.
So we see Dick Grayson as Robin.
Sassy Robin.
But neither of them know who each other are,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, not yet.
I thought this is really, really fun.
Yeah, I like this a lot. And it involves the Mad Hatter, who is one of my favorite, weird, second-rate Batman bad guys.
Yeah, me too. He's great. He's awesome. But he spends most of this, like, bloodied in a hospital bed.
Yeah.
So even if you don't like the Mad Hatter, that's satisfying on some level.
Yeah, I like this a lot.
Yeah. It felt good. I like now that I'm kind of like, especially with DC's books, if I don't like an issue, I'm just going to give the book a break and then check back in with it at some point.
It's a good
and
call.
That's fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I also read...
What else
did you read? Detective Comics? I'm assuming you read Detective Comics.
Yeah, hell yeah, I did.
I really like this.
This is Spoiler, catching up with Spoiler, who doesn't know that Tim Drake is still alive like Batman does.
Mm-hmm.
But she has been working with Anarchy.
One of my favorite Robin villains, because just the funniest. So funny. Anarchy with a K. Yeah. Love it.
And this also had some great stuff with Clayface and the Doctor who's been working on him.
Mm-hmm.
And basically... Oh, Shatterstar hates Clayface.
Aww.
Oh, it's okay. He used to be an actor, but now he's... Now, then
he's kind of a good
it's okay.
guy now. It's all right. Ah,
yeah,
see, now
it's
better.
Fine.
There we go.
He knows where he's fine. That worked. I thought this was really strong. I think he's James Tynion IV is a master at balancing all the different plot threads and setting new things up for the future.
Yeah, really good fun. I'm enjoying this a lot. I like this. I don't like Spoiler, but I'm enjoying this little story arc.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about Suicide Squad quickly
nice.
While Shatterstar grizzles in the background. This is going a bit too stupid. I like a little bit of stupid in my Suicide Squad, but this is it's gone full stupid, and I'm still reading it. I'm still enjoying it, but at one point it was a genuinely great comic, and now it is a kind of just it's bordering on just straight up guilty pleasure again.
Nice, that's also fun though.
At one point, Harley Quinn busts in with a katana and yells, "The sexy cavalry is here!"
Oh no!
but you know what? It's such a fast moving book with so many different characters that it's not boring.
Yeah,
I drop books because they're boring. Sometimes I'll read bad books, but as long as it's not boring, I'll keep reading.
Man,
it's not boring yet, so I keep
speaking
reading.
Speaking of boring, though, did you read Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps?
Yes, I did.
I just think this is boring. I'm bored.
Yeah, it's boring.
It's also like the dullest costume that Orion's ever had. He's
yeah,
riding
the new
a little space scooter.
Of,
make him sillier.
Yeah, totally. didn't even have good Guy Gardner moments and had him jumping into action by going to get a doctor.
Lame.
I don't know. This book, I'm sure, will be great again. It looks great. Did you read Commandy Challenge number 8?
No, I didn't actually get around to that one. Sorry.
So this was the second book with art by Steve Rude and also the second book written by Keith Giffen. So the art was incredible and the writing was very much Keith Giffen trying to channel Kirby. It's hard going back to that very overwritten, he self-narrates. He basically says what he's doing as he's doing it. It's not even thought bubbles. It's Commandy saying, "Now I'm doing this. Oh, cut me a break. Terrible. Are you kidding? Oh, dear."
Shatterstar hates it.
But the art was awesome. I'm really excited, though, for the next issue because it is Tom King and Kevin Eastman. Right?
Oh, cool. I will check that out.
And the art looks so cool. Real, real good.
Nice.
This is an up-and-down series. This was one of the best drawn issues with some of the... I mean, like, if you are a true Kirby fan, I guess you want this kind of writing from this series, but...
Yeah.
I like Kirby art more than Kirby writing. I read Action Comics number 986, which was written by Rob Williams, art by Gillian March. Was a pretty, like, whatever issue of basically Lex Luthor being corrupted by his mother box armor and essentially, like, mutating into Darkseid, almost.
Oh, fun.
And then he kind of teams up with Superman to help him overpower it. But the big thing that happens at the end of this issue is that he is visited by Dr. Oz. Who is the big kind of big bad behind a lot of things that have been happening in the DC since the rebirth stuff. Potentially he is Ozymandias.
I'm starting to wonder if that's all just a big
ruse. Yeah. I reckon it is.
Yeah.
This basically sets up that Mr. Oz's true identity is about to be revealed. I think we get what's his name back to writing that one. Dan Jurgens.
Ah, cool.
So I'm excited to see him return to the book because this is a better book when he's writing it.
Hmm.
Batman and the Shadow by Scott Snyder, Steve Orlando, Riley Rossmo, and what's-his-face Placentia.
Nice.
This is actually wrapping up quite nicely. Riley Rossmo's art is still my favorite thing about it, but as it kind of delves heavier into the Shadow lore that I know less about, I'm actually finding myself a lot more invested than it just being another Joker versus Batman story. But there's one more issue of this left, so I'll talk about the series as a whole when that comes out next month. I gather the last book from DC you read is Mother Panic, issue number 10.
It sure is.
By Jody Houser, Sean Crystal, and Jean-Francis Belou. This is such a great series, and I can't believe I considered dropping it all those months ago.
You fool. It is such good fun.
No, a fool if I dropped it. What I love about this is that, like, Mother Panic is just such a flawed hero.
Yeah.
Both, like, mentally and also physically. Mm-hmm. She has to continually have these very big operations to make herself able to walk, let alone fight crime again. The world that she's a part of, you know, with Ratcatcher and her strange mother, mm-hmm. and these other people from the school that she escaped from, it's so rich and cool. And I really, like... You know, this is only solicited to issue 12, right?
Poo.
And, like, you know, so Shade, the Changing Girl, and Clyde Carson, but this one of all of them, even though, Shade's my favorite of all of the Young Animal books, this one feels like Jody Houser has so much to tell in this world, and I hope she's given the chance to.
I agree.
Apparently they're coming back when there's a big Young Animal DC crossover, but this book is, of all of them, already so much exists in the DC universe, like Batman's in every second issue almost, or referenced.
Mm.
So I don't really see how this will really benefit from being part of, Ratcatcher, who is a DC character, is a main character in this. I don't see how this will benefit from being part of the DC universe any more than it already is. Whatever. I also really love The Backup, which features art by Phil Hester and written by Jim Kruger, Gotham Radio, which is like a kind of about a guy on the radio station kind of reporting on these vigilantes like Batman who have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Yeah,
cool stuff.
It's really good. It's like, it's. I love this sort of stuff that expands on lesser seen corners of the DC universe. I think that's one of the strengths of DC as a...
Yeah, 100%.
As a publisher. I really enjoy this. I think it's really good.
Cool. Well, those are all our reviews. Hope you enjoyed this slightly different, but I think it was mostly the same episode of Serious Issues. All that's left for us to do is to talk about the books that are coming out next week, this week.
Mm.
I'm scrolling through the list now. You know what? I'm going to add a little amendum where I talk about this.
Nice.
Actually, no, fuck it. The good ones are here. They're here. Secret Empire number 10, yep. We get immediately after number 9. So that's the final kind of almost the final issue of that.
Mm-hmm.
We get a Dark Side special of the Kirby 100 issues from DC as well,
mm-hmm.
Featuring an OMAC backup, which is really cool. And looks like Scott Collins is doing some art on that one, and Phil Hester too. That's awesome.
Cool.
We get the James Bond Moneypenny one shot, which I think is written by Jody Houser. Yeah, it is. Jody Houser awesome. On that one. In the Dynamite kind of James Bond books. That's definitely one to pick. I really love like almost all of those James Bond books that they do. I think they're actually really cool and far better than a James Bond comic book series deserves to be. Mm. We are getting a the return of Lady Killer 2 is coming back.
Woo.
A little hiatus while Joelle Jones did that Supergirl Becoming Super book, but now she's back on her own book, which is very exciting because mm-hmm. I love that book.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole bunch more
yeah.
you can pick out.
There's some good sort of trade paperbacks and stuff coming out next week as well. The Old Guard, Greg Rucka's current Image series, the first trade of that is out. I would definitely pick that up if I were you.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's another big week next week.
Sure.
What do you know? But yeah, definitely pick up The Old Guard if you haven't read that yet. That's such a good book.
Mm.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys.
To this episode of Serious Issues.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to find us online, you can find us at facebook.com/Serious Issues Podcast, or you can join our group, which is facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. We are also on Twitter at @serious_issues. Drop us a line on there. And you can find us individually at Siobhan CBG for Siobhan. She's also on Instagram on that same username. And I'm at Levdog, LEVDAWG on Twitter and Instagram. We love hearing from you. If you have any thing that you want us to talk about in the future on the show, let us know and we will try and include it. I doubt I'm going to be sedated anytime soon again. So the next episode should be as normal.
You've done pretty well, though. You don't sound like you were sedated.
My throat really hurts because apparently I was coughing while I was sedated with a big tube down my throat.
Hectic.
So, yeah, I probably shouldn't have talked for an hour and a half. I will speak to you in the person very soon, Siobhan, and
can't
you will
wait.
Hear us listening next week.
Excellent.
Stay serious, everybody.
Do it.
It's my catchphrase now. You have to think of a new one. See you next week.
Bye, guys.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Tsinis.
I'm Kayla Tsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.